Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, depending on what time of the day you're listening to this podcast. And I hope you're having a wicked holiday, a wicked Christmas. If you're listening to this after Christmas, I hope you had a killer holiday. Just a very quick one before we jump into today's episode, which is heavy on the mindset side of things and the moments that have changed my life and how to kind of look out for those over the next 12 months so that you have a wicked 2021. But there is something I want to talk about beforehand, my new Rewire Your Mindset course. So if you're somebody that has already signed up or you've graduated the course from the last group of people or you've no interest in it, you can skip forward the next 60 seconds because I'm just going to touch on the bonus that I'm running for the Rewire Your Mindset course. So for those of you who are long-term listeners of the podcast, have read any of my books, The Fitness Mindset, Rewire Your Mindset, my course is the upgraded version of those. So if you're looking for something very structured, a very A to Z guide on filling out your four quadrants, health, wealth, love, and fulfillment, and then building confidence, avoiding self-sabotage, managing the fear and doing it anyways, and want step-by-step guides on how to do that, and then homework tasks at the end of everything so that you can stay accountable to yourself, I'm actually running a bonus before the 11th of January 2021. So if you're listening to this after the 11th of January 2021, the course is still available. It's just that this bonus is going to be gone. So you can still sign up and get all the benefit from it. It's just that I am doing coaching with the first 100 people who sign up to the Rewire Your Mindset course starting on the 11th of January. So if you want to work with me directly, I'm going to be doing weekly Q&As in the Facebook group for 100 people, or we'll be doing Facebook Lives where you vote on the topics that you want covered. And then I'm going to be doing in-group lives with the 100 people in the group. So if that's something that you're interested in, this is the only mindset coaching that I'm doing at the minute. I don't do any one-to-one anymore. It's all through this setup. And this is going to be the last Facebook group. As I said, you'll be able to sign up to the course after the 11th of January. It's just that this bonus will be gone. So if you want more details on that, I'm running it for 6 weeks from the 11th of January, working directly with me in the Facebook group, and you'll have access to the course straight away. So that's one of the bonuses. You have lifetime access to it. You do it at your own time, at your own speed, and you can access it straight away. It's just that I'm running this bonus for the first 100 people who sign up to the course. If you want more information, just click the link in the description for today's podcast. Pop your email in the search box. I don't know what you call it, the box. And I'll send you all the details on the course and you can see if it's what you're looking for. So that's everything from the short message I wanted to do before today's podcast. Now that's it. Sit back, enjoy, and I hope you enjoy this week's episode. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Brian Keane, best-selling author of the book, The Fitness Mindset and Rewire Your Mindset, normally here to help you by deconstructing expert guests on all things health, fitness, and mindset, but today is a solo episode. So it's going to be one of those press record and talk mindset podcasts. So I know a lot of you are big fans of these podcasts. Some of you, if it's your first time listening, hopefully you'll become a fan of these podcasts. Some of the more popular ones that I've done recently were 6 ways I completely rewired my mindset over the years, 8 critical habits for building mental toughness, and a couple of episodes around mental health and anxiety. I'll link those in the show notes. But today's episode is going to be very similar in the sense that I'm going to press record and talk, but I have a couple of points in front of me. So 6 points that I'm going to kind of talk around, but outside of that there's going to be no structure. I have no idea where this podcast is going to go, but it's something that I've been wanting to do for a couple of months now. And if you're a long-term listener to this podcast, you may have heard the episodes with Paul Dermody. So Paul has been on this podcast seven or eight times talking everything from mindset and weight loss to just life in general. And the power of moments is something that I kind of got from him. When we first met in 2014, he was speaking to me about how life can change on a turn of a dime. And he's a big believer that when you meet the right people, or you go after the right job, or you end up in the right place or location, that life can change off the basis of moments that happen. And I've been having a few of those moments recently. You know, over this whole COVID-19, the whole lockdown 2020, I've had some amazing people come into my life. I've had some amazing things happen to me that has made me think about the power of moments. Those things, or those people, or those opportunities that present themselves that completely change the trajectory of your life. And if you just learn to get out of your own way, that you can kind of let what's meant to happen, happen. So this can be with your job that you find yourself in, you know, your future soulmate or romantic partner, or even a mentor who'll potentially shape your life going forward, either digitally or, you know, in the physical world. But the take-home message today is going to be about being ready for those moments and about how luck is setting up an environment for good things to happen. And as I said in my first book, The Fitness Mindset, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. So I'm going to talk through some of the moments in my life over the last few years from more so 2014 onwards, no, even before then, 2012, I think is the earliest one when I speak about teaching and getting your ladder up against the right wall. I'm going to jump around. As I said, I have no pre-planned idea or stories for this podcast. I just have my 6 bullet points. I'm going to talk around them, and hopefully you will enjoy today's episode and get loads from it. It's going to be heavy on the mindset side of things. So if you enjoy those types of episodes, sit back and enjoy. So when it comes to moments that can potentially change your life, I kind of think about putting yourself in an environment for good things to happen. I've always been a long-term subscriber that luck is definitely a thing, in the sense that if you put yourself in the right place or you work harder, you can set yourself up for good things to happen. But you have to be ready for them when they do. And your life can change off the basis of a couple of things that happen to you. Certain moments, the people you meet, the jobs you go for, the experiences you have. Your entire life can change. And we've all had those moments. We've met that person. You might be this year or previous in your life having met your soulmate or a mentor or somebody that's just completely changed your life for the better. And other people, it'll be more down to the experiences. So, you know, you ran a half marathon or a full marathon, or you've done a bodybuilding show or a bikini or a fitness model show, or you've done something that's just kind of transcended your own belief systems so that now you're a very different person. And when I think of moments, that's kind of what I think about. And the first one for me was my first day of teaching, when I realized that my ladder was up against the wrong wall. And if you've read either of my books, The Fitness Mindset or Rewire Your Mindset, or you've been through my online course, Rewire Your Mindset, the course, you know that the analogy that I use time and time again is make sure your ladder is up against the right wall. And what that effectively means is make sure that you're clear on the goal you're going for and make sure it's the thing that you truly want. And I made a little bit of a mistake when I went into my profession as a teacher. So a little bit of background for those of you who are new to the podcast or haven't listened to to the older episodes. I worked as a teacher for 4 years. So I was a primary school teacher. I did an undergraduate in business, and then I did a postgraduate in London as a teacher. And then I worked for 3.5 years, nearly 4 years as a teacher. And when I walked into my first teaching job, I remember being really consumed by the idea of just getting a job. I was kind of blinded, if I'm being honest, because I had been working towards this particular goal, getting my qualification and then getting a job, that I was kind of like a horse that had the blinders on the side. I wasn't really questioning it. I wasn't thinking about the process. I wasn't doing any of that. I was just like, well, I said I was going to be a teacher. I told everybody I was going to do that. This is what my friends and family expect of me. And I just kind of went blindly towards that target. And I remember my first teaching day, literally walking in with my kids who were great, and my school by all means was good. The first school, by all means, I didn't love it, but it was one of those things that I'm like, I can make do with this. But I was about an hour into my first day and I thought, fuck it. I was like, I don't want to be a teacher. I remember having this, I felt like I had been metaphorically or figuratively smacked in the face. That's kind of how it feels when you've climbed up a ladder and you realize it's up against the wrong wall. You get this very obvious moment that you're like, this isn't what I'm supposed to do. You know, some of us will have it in relationships where you're in a toxic relationship with somebody and something will happen and you'll just have your eyes opened and you'll realize that this isn't where I'm supposed to be. For me, it came in the sense of working a job that I didn't want to be in. And it still took me 4 years to make a jump over to a career in fitness for lots of different reasons. I've talked about this in books and previous podcasts, that the fear disguised the practicality, being too worried about the opinions of others by going after something. I was afraid of what people would say because I had spent so much time working towards becoming a teacher, and I told everybody if I was out on nights out, if I caught up with friends, family members, that this is what I was doing, that I felt like I had to do it then. I had created this kind of self-imposed prison, and the sunk cost fallacy, the constantly telling myself, well, I've spent all this time, energy, and money, I have to do this now, not realizing that, you know, the sunk cost fallacy is just throwing good money after bad. But my entire philosophy of your ladder being up against the right wall came from that moment. It took a few years to kind of develop, but that's always the moment that I think of, that it's very difficult. And one of the reasons it took me so long, and one of the reasons I have a lot of empathy with people who are in jobs that they hate, or people that are in relationships that they're afraid to leave, or someone that's overweight and is struggling to make a change. I can empathize completely with that, because you've been doing something for so long. And when you've climbed up a ladder, it's all well and good me or somebody else saying, you know, get your ladder up against the right wall, go do the thing, make the decision and make the choice and just do it. But it's fucking hard to take the ladder, climb back down, put it up against another wall and then start climbing again. And it's not an easy choice. It's why it took me 4 years. And I never want people to listen to my podcast or follow my social media channels or read any of my books and think, yeah, Brian just made the decision and he went and did it. That's something I do now, but that took fucking years of conditioning of trying to build the self-discipline and not letting fear stop me and feeling the fear and doing it anyways and getting clear and extensive clarity on what it is that I want. That's something that I got better at over the years. But I'm living proof that it took me fucking 4 years to leave a job I hated because I wanted to work as a fitness industry. I wanted to work as a personal trainer, but I was too afraid. I had that fear disguised as practicality. It's not practical to leave what I thought was a safe and secure job. It's not practical to spend all this time, energy, and money in university and college and then to go do something that takes 6 months to become qualified in that anybody could do. That was my kind of ignorant thinking when it came to becoming a personal trainer and going down and getting my strength and conditioning badges. And again, it takes significantly longer to do more. But for a basic personal training cert, I'm like, I've spent five years in college. I was like, I could do this course in 6 months. I'm like, there's clearly a reason that more people don't do this. And I had all these stories built up in my head to kind of justify my practicality on why I didn't want to leave something I hated. And my penny drop moment came at the Christmas of 2013, when I was at home and I was telling my mum how much I hated my job. I was like, I absolutely hate what I'm doing. And she asked me, what would I do for free? Something that I've put to people on this podcast, I put to people in books, I've put it in my course, Rewire Your Mindset. What would you do for free? And that was my eureka moment. That was my penny drop moment. I'm like, well, I would work in a gym. I was like, I would literally clean floors in a gym. And she was like, okay, well, what kind of jobs can you do in a gym? I'm like, oh, I could be a personal trainer. She's like, oh, you should do that. And again, it still took a few years before I got that up and running. But I went back and I did it on the side. I did my side hustle. I worked as a teacher during the day. I studied to become a personal trainer. And then when I qualified, worked as a personal trainer at nighttime. And over the space of a couple of years, was able to kind of rewire my mindset enough that I could make that jump, knowing that what's the downside? The downside is if I make this jump, I'm going to have to go back. If I fail, I'm going to have to go back working a teaching job, which was the position I was already currently in. So one of the mindset tips that I'll advise people, or I use myself, is, you know, weigh up the upside, weigh up the downside, and then ask yourself, can you handle the downside? And once you're looking at it with kind of an objective view, you normally find that you've your own biggest enemies between your two ears. You've made the situation so much worse in your own head because you're too attached to it. You're too kind of emotionally involved. Like if you've ever uttered the words to yourself, oh, if I could just take the advice I offer my friends, you know exactly what I'm talking about here. Like we become so emotionally attached to our situation that we can't remove ourselves from it. One of the things I talk about in Rewire Your Mindset in the book is, you know, taking that 3,500 foot airplane view. I'm like, look down on the situation, unemotionally attached from it, and then figure out what's the next best step forward. What's the upside if you make this decision? In my case, the upside was that I would make a full-time working as a personal trainer. Again, it's exceeded any of my expectations that I would be doing what I'm doing now. But at the time, like your goals change and your expectations level change as you go down a journey. But all I wanted to do was to make the equivalent amount of money working as a personal trainer that I was as a teacher, which is a very achievable goal looking back, but at the time, that's all I wanted. That was the goal. I was like, that would be the upside. The downside was that I didn't make it work and I'd have to go back, get or try and apply and get another teaching job. And I asked myself if I could handle that downside. And I remember the thought process in my head was, one, I can handle that downside. And two, I would rather know and make the attempt to working and doing something I love and having failed, at least I would know that I didn't leave that behind me. You know, I speak about the 97-year-old rule. What would your 97-year-old self regret more? And I thought about that. I thought about, well, at least if I gave fitness a go as a career and it fucked up and I was terrible at it and it didn't work, I'm like, at least I'd know. I'm like, at least I'd know that I wouldn't have any regrets on that. And I remember thinking that I would go to my grave or I'd go to my deathbed at 97 years old. I was like, I would regret not making this jump. I would regret not taking this chance. And because of that, I was able to take the initial 0 to 1. Being the most difficult part of any journey is the start. Going from 0 to 1 is considerably harder than going from 1 to 10. But that was a moment that changed my entire life. Again, a lot of the moments I'll mention, some of them are positive, some of them are what can be perceived as negative. Again, you put your own lens and your own frame around positive and negative. And, you know, there's no positive or negative, there's no good or bad. It's your thinking that makes it so. It's whatever lens or whatever angle or whatever reframe you want to put on it. But that perceived negative of, I hate what I'm doing, this isn't the job I want to be in, was the seed that planted that future success, that seed of failure planting a tree of future success, that it happened in that moment. And I'll remember it because these moments and the other 5 that I'm going to mention after this, I remember them like they were yesterday, because everything changed. Everything in terms of a complete paradigm shift, a complete worldview shift. I had been so blinded by what I wanted to achieve. Other people listening to this podcast, some of you listening will be similar to me. You're very kind of type A, that you can set a goal, put your head down and just go, which is really beneficial at times. And if it's facing in the right direction, it's actually really helpful. There's a lot of other people listening who are the opposite. They struggle with analysis by paralysis. You overthink it and actually never get off the starting block. And most people will fall somewhere in between those two things. But the downside of that type A and just putting the blinkers on and going means that you normally get to the top of the ladder against the wrong wall before you notice it, because you have to have a moment like that that punches you in the face. And that's what I would advise, is look out for those moments. Some of you will have had them. Some of you will have them come up. Some of you, as soon as I mention it here, something will jump to mind, an idea, an experience, a person, a job, something will spring to mind where you'll think, my ladder's up against the wrong wall here. This isn't what I want to do. And one of the screensavers I had on my phone, I had this on my phone for nearly 2 years, was the quote that when you stop chasing the wrong things, you give the right things a chance to catch up. And I think climbing the ladder up against the right wall is a very good version of that. So ask yourself, what area of your life is your ladder up against the wrong wall? Is it your job? Is it your relationship? Is it your fitness? Is it your finances? What are you doing? Where in your life are you just operating on autopilot? You're kind of sleepwalking through it. You're not really thinking about it. But now that I've said it, you go, fuck, that's actually not what I want. That's not where I want to be. That's not who I want to be with. That's not the situation or environment or experiences that I want to be having. Ask yourself that question, but realize that even if it's a bad or what can be perceived as a quote unquote bad moment, it normally, if you choose to see it, will set up the seeds for future success or for that tree of future success. It happened to me when I was teaching. I remember it like it was yesterday, but it set me up to do the things I'm doing now. So I'm eternally grateful for it. The next moment then came a couple of years later, and this was with my first fitness model show. And some of you listening to this podcast will go down that route. You'll do photo shoots, you'll do fitness model shows, bodybuilding shows, bikini shows. Some of you, that world is so far from you that it's not even a consideration or it's not even an idea. But what I got from my first fitness model show is what a lot of people get from when they set a goal for themselves that is just out of reach and they end up achieving it. So that can be a weight loss target. That can be a running a 5K or a half marathon or a marathon. It can come in lots of different shapes and forms, especially in fitness. But for me, it came with my first fitness model show. So in 2014, I did the Miami Pro Show in London, which is a fitness model show, a pretty big fitness model show. And I decided the year before that this is something I really wanted to do. 2013, I was still working as a teacher. And when I made the jump to move back to Ireland from London, I was working as a teacher in London. And in January 2014, I moved back home, moved back in with my mum and dad. My sister gave me a crappy little Toyota Yaris. And I've told that story on the podcast in the past. One of those cars that I used to have to leave an hour early for work just in case the car didn't start. And I moved back. And one of the things that I wanted to do, and for two reasons, was do a bodybuilding show or a fitness model show. Again, they're all kind of in the same bracket. Fitness modeling was the one that I chose just because of the way my physique is. And I was lucky with kind of some of the other symmetrical features I have. It works well in that world. And I had it for two reasons. One, I was trying to separate myself above other trainers at the time because I had no business. I had nobody that knew who I was. I didn't have a podcast. I didn't have social media. I didn't have any brand. But I was a decent personal trainer. I'd been working for 2 years as a personal trainer in London at nighttime. So I had worked out my craft and I was pretty good at what I was doing. It's just that nobody knew who I was. So I had a branding problem. I had a marketing problem. And one of my ways around that was to start competing in fitness model shows because there wasn't a lot of people doing it at the time in my locale. And that was my primary reason. Secondary reason being, it was always something I wanted to do. I grew up watching Arnold Schwarzenegger. I grew up watching those classic bodybuilding. For as long as I can remember, since I started lifting weights at 13, I've always kind of idolized those physique competitions. Even when I was playing GAA and playing sport, I would always follow what, you know, Arnold had done, and I would always follow what other bodybuilders had done. So it was always kind of one of those side passion projects that I had myself. It was one of those goals that I had kind of put on a pedestal, and I've spoken about this in previous podcasts about not putting people and not putting goals on pedestals. And that was something I did routinely, that the language for me, or how this showed up for me, was that's something other people do. That's generally how it would word up for me. So when I think about marathons, when I thought about bodybuilding shows, when I thought about people that run their own businesses, the language that would automatically come into my mind was, that's something other people do. Again, massive self-limiting belief that I had from my experiences and my circumstances in life, not questioning that they were opinions versus facts, but that was my thinking. And when I moved back, my desire to succeed as a personal trainer was probably bigger than my fear of doing the show. On top of it, always being something I wanted to do. But I was terrified before I did that show. I was fucking shitting it completely. Like, for the weeks leading up, I was terrified of flying over to London. I was terrified of what would happen if, you know, I got laughed off the stage. I was terrified that, you know, I would panic and I would just freeze and I would be there doing these poses and then I wouldn't know what I was doing. I had all these worst case scenarios. I'd catastrophized the entire situation to the point that if you had given me an out, I would have taken it. If you had given me a credible out, like I told my family, I told my friends, I told people in the gym I was doing it. So I was committed in the sense that I was accountable because I would have looked like a complete fraud had I not done it. But if I had told nobody, I would have easily pulled out of that because I was terrified. I was so afraid. And again, all fear based, in terms of the acronym I use for fear is false evidence appearing real. That's all it was. Like, there's a big difference between real fear and perceived fear. Like, real fear is, you know, this snake might bite me and it's poisonous and I die. Real fear is, if I fall off the roof of my house, I'm going to break my neck and die, or I'm going to break my neck and go into a coma or be paralyzed. I'm like, they're real fears. They're totally legit. Gravity's working against you. You know, poisonous and biology is working against you. But perceived fears are very different. Perceived fears are you making up the story of how terrified you are. That's what my version of that was. And the same things happen. The thing is with fear, it's a weird one because fear never goes away. That's one of the misconceptions I think people have when they listen to podcasts like this, either when I'm speaking or when I have guests speaking, that people think fear goes away. I'm like, fear doesn't go away. I'm like, you just get better at handling it. I'm like, that's the only difference. Your fear conditioning becomes better. You feel the fear when you do it anyways. It doesn't go away. It just, you get stronger and you get mentally tougher and you're able to go through it. That's the only difference. And when I did Marathon to Saab, a couple of years later, and I'll come back to this again, I was fucking terrified of before Marathon de Sable. It was so similar to how I felt before I did my first fitness modeling show, that the only reason I was able to kind of get out of my own head was I had to remind myself that I felt this way before. I'm like, you felt this way before when you were doing a fitness modeling show and look what happened. You know, now, by all means, Marathon de Sable, there was some real fears there as well. Very high risk that something bad could happen in the Sahara Desert and you could die. But most of it was perceived fear. It was me just worrying about shit that I shouldn't have been worrying about. And you can anchor. And one of the tools that I give people when it comes to mindset and dealing with fear is anchor a time in the past when you felt fearful and you did it anyways. And some of us have extreme examples. For me, I was able to use my fitness model show when I did Marathon de Sable. I was able to use the run in the Sahara when I ran through the Arctic. Some people have extreme versions. But remember the first time you kissed a guy or a girl? You're fucking terrified. I remember my first kiss. I was like, I'm shitting it. I was like, it was the biggest deal ever. I was like 11. She was 12. I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? I'm like, and I told her I'd done it loads of times. I was one of those little liars. And I was completely shitting a brick. And that's just something you take for granted now. That when you're an adult, you know, and regardless of preference, guy or girl, you just take it for granted. You kiss them, your partner, your girlfriend, a night out, whatever it is, and you kind of just take it for granted. But at one point in your life, you were terrified of that thing. You were terrified of that experience and that event. And you just remind yourself, so you anchor a time in the past when you felt afraid and you use that to push on forward and you feel the fear and do it anyways. And when I did my first fitness model show, I remember, because I did so well in it, probably helped. My version of doing well was not being laughed off the stage. And when I came back and I placed in the top five, I placed fourth at that show, I got so much confidence from it. The analogy I use is legs on a confidence table. That when you set small goals for yourself, it's like adding legs to a table. So I want to run 5 kilometers, then I want to run 6 kilometers. Every time you set a goal, like, building confidence is just making agreements and keeping promises to yourself. And when you do that repeatedly, you build more confidence. And if you set that goal, or I want to squat, you know, 3 plates, or I want to squat 25 kilos and I want to go up to 26 kilos, or I want to go to 30 kilos, you're setting small goals for yourself and you're adding small legs to that confidence table. But every once in a while, something big will happen. Something that was outside of your reach. You know, I always think of the goals you set for yourself should be slightly out of what you think is achievable. That's generally how I'll set my goals. When I did a fitness model show, it was a fear-based decision, but I'm like, I wasn't really sure if I was going to be able to make the stage. So my goal was just to compete. I didn't even have a placing in mind. When I did Marathon de Sable in 2018, when I ran through the Arctic in 2019, when I ran my first 100-miler in 2020, a lot of those goals were slightly outside of my reach. Marathon de Sable at the time was way outside of my reach. That's why I got so much from it, which I'll come back to later. But those goals and setting goals for yourself that are, you're not fully sure if you can achieve them, that's probably the goal you should set. Because if you do achieve it and you do get there, you're going to have a massive legs to that confidence table. And the downside is, weighing up the upside, weighing up the downside is, you'll have failure as feedback. Even if you don't hit the goal, you can take what you got from it and then you can apply it elsewhere, or else you can come back and give it another go or try it again. But I got so much confidence from that because it came on the other side of the fear. You know, one of my mentors used to always tell me that the fear is the person you want to be. You know, don't let fear stop you making a decision on what you're doing. And the other side of that fear is the person you want to be. And I remind myself of that all the time when I'm feeling afraid with a decision I'm making, whether it's in my personal life, my business life, my fitness life. That's why I make those decisions. And I think that moment for me was when I came off the stage. It wasn't even when I got my trophy for fourth place. It was when I came off the stage, I was like someone had given me a tablet of ecstasy. I was just buzzing completely because I was so afraid. And I went out there and I kind of did the fake it till you make it and just kind of powered through. And when I got backstage, I was on a cloud. And that moment, I felt so confident. I remember thinking, wow, I was like, that was nowhere near as bad as I thought. I was like, I was so afraid. I was so terrified right before I stepped out on stage. And when I came back, it was completely, it had dissipated. It had got to the point that I'm like, what was I even afraid of? And that's how most fears are, particularly those perceived fears. It's what was I afraid of? And normally it's just your own biggest enemy living between your two ears. So when it comes to my second moment that changed my life, it was the first fitness model show that I did and the confidence I got from it. The next moment is one that I've never talked on the podcast previously, partly because I didn't really know how to word it, but also it's one of those things that took a couple of years to process that I didn't fully feel comfortable talking about it on the podcast because I didn't really know how to express myself with it. And that was the philosophy of who will cry when you die. I speak about this in Rewire Your Mindset in the last chapter. I'm like, who will cry when you die? Make a list of those people. And if you're wondering who your inner circle should be, there's a good chance it's those people on that list. But in 2016, I was doing a lot of traveling. I was doing a lot of traveling to business events. I was doing a lot of traveling to personal development events. And I had a couple of penny drop moments that year. That was the first year that I was starting to do really well financially, in the sense that I had more money than I knew what to do with in 2016. And kind of from that point onwards, I got better with my finances. But I didn't really know, or I wasn't really sure how to handle it, because I came from kind of humble beginnings. Never really had that much money when I was growing up, and I didn't earn that much as a teacher, that I was kind of going to every sort of personal development or business conference that I could. And most of them were a waste, if I'm being honest. I didn't get much from them, either that I wasn't at the place for them or the messages weren't for me. But there was one that had a massive impact on my life, and it's since been, they don't do it anymore, but it was called Breakthrough, and it was in California. It was in down south of California, just up from San Diego. And there was a, I want to call it a experience is probably the best word to describe it. There was a lot of different practical elements to this course. It was kind of a course in person, other people, lots of discussion around different things that you could potentially break through in your life. So the idea was that if you were stuck, that you were going to be able to break through whatever your version of a breakthrough was. And there was one experience with that. It was an intensive over 3 days, constant, just straight through, 12, 13 hours a day for 3 days straight. And there was a boat experience that they did. So if you can picture this, I do something similar at, I used to do it at my seminars, a version of this, that the boat experience was where you had to picture yourself on a life raft, and life raft goes down, you're dead, and somebody has to come back and tell your family members or your friends or the people closest to you that, you know, your boat didn't make it back, you didn't make it through, and that, you know, you're not alive anymore. And the whole idea was they would do a visualization on who were you picturing in your mind, and who did you think about when you thought about yourself drowning at the bottom of the ocean. I'm like, who was that messenger going back to? And at the time for me, it was only two people. It's since expanded because I do a version of this myself where I'll just picture that, the who will cry when you die. But at the time, it was my mum and my daughter. And in 2016, I wasn't as clear on my high priorities, or I wasn't as clear on the things that were of high priority in my life. I spoke about this in the books, and I'll touch on it here as well, that one of the misconceptions I had, or one of the mistakes that I made, was because I had started to grow and I was starting to get a little bit of financial success, I definitely had a higher opinion of myself. A lot of my self-worth was measured in my net worth. And it was just switching from one thing to another. When I used to compete, one of the reasons I left bodybuilding and I left fitness model shows was I realized I had just such junk values. I'm like, my value and my self-worth were, I won't say 100% tied, but they were probably 95% tied to the way that I looked. And then once I left that world, I'm like, fuck that. I'm like, I'm not having that as my value anymore. But it just went into another direction, and it went into financial success and making money. And I had a lot of my self-worth wrapped up in that. And when I went to this conference, or when I went and did this boat experience, it made me realize that I wasn't picturing the number in my bank account when I died. I wasn't picturing the way that I looked when I died. I was picturing the people that were closest to me. And it was a moment. It was one of those that brings you to tears kind of moments, because you're picturing your own self, your own mortality. You're very conscious that you're not this superman or superwoman that you could die at any moment, life could end at any moment. And what are you doing on those days? And, you know, what would you give for today if tomorrow wasn't promised? And it made me realize that, fuck, I'm not happy with the person I'm becoming. I'm not happy with the direction I'm taking my life. I was like, my priorities are all fucked up. And I left that retreat, I left that boat experience in particular, thinking, I have another junk value. I'm like, I've literally just moved from the numbers on my body fat and the amount of muscle I have to the numbers in my bank account. I'm like, I've switched one junk value for another. And it was a bit of an eye-opening moment for me. I'm thankful and really grateful for it now. But I remember it hit me like a brick to the head. It was very similar to my first day of teaching in the sense that it shook me a bit. When I had that moment when I was teaching where I'm like, this isn't what I want to do, I felt really shook. And this was similar, but a little bit more extreme. I felt really shook. I felt like the world from under me had been shaken. And I had to reevaluate things completely. I remember spending the next 2 or 3 months just reevaluating everything. I'm like, right, where else am I not spending my time? Or where else am I not prioritizing the people that are closest to me? And by all means, it's still a work in progress. Like, you're never fully there. But that moment for me was eye-opening. It was one of those things that made me realize that there's other people in my life, especially the people in my life that I'm trying to be connected and stay connected with and relationships that I'm trying to cultivate, that are more important to me than all these other things. I'm like, nobody is going to give a fuck what's in my bank account when I die. Nobody is going to care how much muscle I have in my body when I die. I'm like, the people that are closest to me are going to care about who I was when I was with them. The people who will cry when I die are the people who I've spent the time cultivating those relationships with. And it just reminds me, it's one of those things I still come back to regularly. Now, that has expanded. That circle now includes a couple of my best friends, my sister, people that are in my life that are going to be in it for the next 50, 60, 70 years if everything goes well into plan. But asking yourself, who will cry when you die? That's my question that I come back to. And the moment came from realizing that I had all these junk values, these things that I thought were important, that if I just stepped away, I would have realized that they weren't. I was either falling into what society or what everybody said looks like success and not defining what success meant for me, which is now doing something I love, having a positive impact with the things that I create, the books, the podcasts, the courses, being around the people and spending time with the people that fall into that family inner circle bracket, that I'm trying to make sure that they always take priority. And that came off the back of realizing that I'm in a bad place. I'm not happy with where my life is going. And it took a few months to reevaluate. It probably took a couple of years to even implement right, because the start of any new journey is the most difficult, as I said, but you get better as you go along. But the third moment for me was figuring out who would cry when I die and identifying what my junk values were, and then getting clear what success looked like for me and what my real and true values were. Okay, the next one is out of sequence, but it's out of sequence for a reason. Structured chaos, so to speak. And that's when my daughter Holly was born. So, long-time listeners of the podcast, you'll know my daughter Holly. She's six at the end of May. So she's five currently, she's going to be six at the end of May. And the reason I put this one out of order, partly because I want to emphasize the point that success doesn't always look like an upward trend. And when Holly was born, I had a priority shift. I was preparing for what was at the time the WBFF World's Fitness Model Championships in August 2015. And Holly was born in May 2015. And when she was born, I was very all consumed with the world of competing. I was eating my 6 to 8 meals a day. I was training twice a day when I could. I was focusing on my sleep, focusing on my recovery. I was living and breathing everything to do with fitness model competitions. And when she was born, I had a very quick paradigm shift in terms of what was a priority for me now. And very soon after, I remember thinking, this isn't what I want to do anymore. I was like, I can't live this, what I thought at the time was a very selfish lifestyle. And it is to a degree. Now, I'm also a fan of not giving from an empty cup, that you have to serve your own fulfillment needs in order to be the best version of you can be for your family members, for your kids, for your friends, whoever is the higher priority in your life. But the reason I'm telling this story and the reason I'm shifting the order is because I had that priority shift when she was born and then I lost it. And that's a really, I won't say embarrassing thing, but it's something that you don't like to confront and don't like to admit, but it's true. And when I went to the retreat about what I spoke about earlier about the boat experience, that was my course correction. When Holly was born, I felt like my compass was pointing north. I'm like, it's going in the right direction. This is my priority. This is what's important to me. This is what I want to do. You know, I want to try and be the best dad I can be, raise her the best way I can. This is my highest order priority. But then I lost that. And over the space of the next 18 months, 2 years, I started to get success in other areas. And then I kind of lost it a little bit. And for me, it was a little bit of an eye-opening experience at the retreat that I wasn't being who I was supposed to be and I wasn't even living in alignment with what I was saying. And my version of this, and this probably represents the entire macro situation of the moment, was I used to be addicted to my phone. And one of the reasons that I've got such a good relationship with my phone now and social media is because I didn't have a good relationship with it at one point. I was completely addicted to it. I was addicted to my phone. I was addicted to social media. I was addicted to the likes and comments. I was addicted to fucking everything that had to do with it. And one of the reasons that I love Johan Hari's book, Lost Connection, so much is it speaks on that. It speaks about phone addiction in particular, but it speaks about connecting with other people. And one of the... So Johan's been on this podcast. I'll link it in the show notes for today's episode as well. But one of the things that I was doing, one of the experiences and habits that I poorly formed was I would be playing with Holly and I'd be scrolling through my phone. But my words would say, oh, this person here, Holly is my most important person to me. But yet I would find myself scrolling through the phone and going through Instagram and going through social media when I probably should have been present in the moment with her. And that took a little bit of a while, or that took a while to understand and realize that I formed a really bad habit. And you know, if you've been listening to this podcast for a while, how big I am on habits. Tell me what you do every day. I'll tell you where you'll be in a year, or, you know, form good habits and then become a slave to them. But I'd formed a really bad habit. I'm like, I'm hooked on my phone. I'm addicted to my phone. And I'm sending out a subconscious message that this thing in my hand here, this phone, this device is more important than you. And when I came back from the breakthrough, when I came back from that experience in California, that was one of the first things I changed. I kind of went back to my roots. I went back to asking myself the question, well, what kind of dad do you want to be? And I'm like, well, I don't want to be the one that's on his phone all the time. And I was like, I also don't want to be the one that's addicted to work. And I don't want to be the one that misses the Christmas recitals. And I don't want to be the one that misses important moments because I'm glued to a work task or I'm glued to my phone. And the reason I bring that up is if you're going through something now and you've taken a figurative step back, that doesn't mean you can't take a figurative two steps forward from this point onwards. And everything isn't a linear progression upwards. Success isn't 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Success is 1, 2, 3, 2, 1, 1, 2, 3, and you end up going up, going back, going up, going back. That's what it looks like. And we can be so harsh on ourselves and we can be so hard on ourselves when we've got into another toxic relationship or we're in another job that we hate or we're doing another diet plan or fitness program that we can't stick to. I'm like, that's all feedback that what you're doing right now isn't working and you probably need to change it, or what you're doing right now could potentially work, but you need to rewire your mindset around it. And the reason I wanted to put this out of order, because Holly was born in 2015 and I went to that retreat in 2016, the end of 2016. The reason I wanted to bring it up in that order is if you're going through something now and you've gone backwards, there's no reason that you can't potentially go forwards as of this moment, because it's been pointed out to you, because you're aware of it now. There's nothing to stop you doing that. And I made a couple of habit changes after that. I did what I call, you know, my daddy-daughter day with Holly. Little bit of a tricky one with COVID now. But, you know, having that day that's just me and her. I don't have my phone. A lot of you know I do digital detox at the weekend, outside of COVID especially, that I'm not on my phone. And that's partly down to my own addiction with the phone, but partly down to me trying to cultivate that relationship and make it stronger. So all you do is identify where are your fuck ups, where's your mistakes right now, and then you try and put a plan in place and form better habits that's going to support you going forward. Form good habits and then become a slave to them, because it becomes automatic and it becomes easier, whether that's with your nutrition, whether that's with your training, whether that's with your relationships, whether that's with your job, whatever it is. It's very, very similar. Figure out where are you making the mistakes, where is your fuck up right now, and then course correct going forward, and realize that success isn't a linear, straightforward path. There's always going to be setbacks. There's always going to be moments that are seen as failure, but you can choose and use that failure as feedback to potentially go forward. Again, similar to what I said in point one, the seeds of failure planting the trees of future success. So that was my version of that. That's when I got clear on my priorities again for a second time. And thankfully, I haven't fallen off since, or not that I'm aware of. And I haven't fallen off since, but you stay constant guard of it. It's like the analogy I use for anxiety and mental health. It's like sweeping the floor. I'm like, you can sweep the floor today, but if you don't do it tomorrow and the day after, it'll get dirty again. Staying on top of the things that are supporting you and making your life better, you have to keep an eye on them and make sure that it's constantly progressing in a positive way. And you need to bring a little bit of mindful awareness to it at times, just to keep you on track. And if that's all it does, it's very, very easy to sustain it. A lot more difficult to start it, but once you get started, it does get considerably easier as you go. The next moment then is the Sahara, running 6 back-to-back marathons through the Sahara. And I've talked to this at length on previous podcasts about that experience, so I won't go into the actual process of running 6 back-to-back marathons and some of the stories that happened to me in the Sahara Desert. But what I will say is I had the moment when I crossed that finish line that will live with me forever about my self-limiting beliefs. And one of the most frequent questions I get asked when I'm on other people's podcasts is normally the question between the Sahara and the Arctic. So the Sahara was 6 back-to-back marathons through the Sahara. The Arctic was 230 kilometers over 5 days. Very different conditions, one extremely hot, one extremely cold. And people will generally ask, what was the difference between them? And apart from the obvious answers, one was fucking freezing and the other was really hot. The answer for me has always been that I got two different things, which brings me on to moment 5 and moment 6. But when it came to the Sahara, it was the self-limiting belief moment that I got. Until I finished, and this is the God's honest truth, you can go back and listen to the podcast that I recorded right after the Sahara. Until I finished the last marathon, the 6th marathon on the 6th day, I wasn't sure I was going to be able to complete it. And just to contrast that, when I ran through the Arctic, I tore my Achilles 230 kilometers from the end of the Arctic, but I knew I was going to finish the Arctic. I knew I, even with the torn Achilles, as long as it didn't rupture and literally disconnect from my Achilles tendon, I was going to finish that race. That's not how I felt in the Sahara. When I was in the Sahara, I wasn't sure until I got to the very end if I was going to complete it. And what that did for me was it gave me this massive confidence boost. It also gave me this massive questioning of my self-limiting stories. And I've spoken on this podcast and courses on books in the past about questioning that story. Like, what is your self-limiting story that you're telling yourself, and separating opinions from facts? That a fact is, if you jump off a building 10 stories high, you're going to go splat on the ground. An opinion is, you can't start a company or start your own business because you're not smart enough, or you can't lose weight because you've got bad genetics, or you can't get fit or do marathons because that's what other people do. I'm like, they're opinions. They're not facts. And when I came back from the Sahara, it made me question everything. It made me figure out, where am I limiting the beliefs? And I think on reflection now, it's down to the fact that because it was so far outside my comfort zone, and it was so far outside what I thought was of the bounds of possibility in terms of what I could do, it's why I got so much from it. Now, that's not a call to action to go run 6 back-to-back marathons through the Sahara or even do anything equivalent. But for me, it was the extremity and the facing of the fear and kind of attacking towards it and going towards it that gave me so much from it. And the reason I felt so confident coming back, now, ironically, I had, and I speak about this in the Rewire Your Mindset book, about when I went to do the Barcelona Ultramarathon, how I failed at that race and how it set me up for success with the Arctic. It went two ways. The self-limited and the confidence that I got was very real, in the sense that I thought that I could move the world. I thought I could do anything when I finished the Sahara. ironically, then when I went to try and run an ultra marathon that November 2018 in Barcelona and I failed it, I timed out and quit that race. It made me realize that, oh, the process matters. I'm like, just because you ran six back-to-back marathons through the Sahara doesn't mean you can just pick up and do any race. I'm like, if your mindset's not right and you don't train for this, you're not going to finish it. So I got a lot from that as well. Failure is feedback. That's actually the chapter it's in the book. But the Sahara gave me that self-limiting, or gave me that question of that self-limiting belief. And a lot of us will have a version of this. Something will happen in your life that will make you question your belief system. Sometimes it happens in a negative way. It can be somebody can question a relationship that you're in, either familial or romantic, or somebody can question a religious belief that now feels a little bit shattered or doesn't seem as secure or strong as it was before the questioning. So sometimes it might not always be the most negative, but in a lot of cases, it's going to be positive, that you'll do something and then you'll shift that mindset belief. You'll run 10K and then you'll sign up for a half marathon and complete it, and then you'll ask yourself, wow, well, if I can do a half marathon, why couldn't I do a full marathon? Or you'll go into the gym and you're only able to squat the bar, or you're able to bench the bar, and now you've got 20 kilos each side of it. You'll get these shifts, you'll get these movements, these moments that make you think, fuck, where else am I limiting myself? And that's what I'll ask. That's the call to action on this one, is just ask yourself, what's your belief? Where do you think you're not able to achieve? Like, the test I use, this is in my Rewire Your Mindset course, but this used to come back when I used to do the seminars, was I would ask yourself, or ask you to think about, what would you do, be, or have if you knew you couldn't fail? What would your relationships look like? What would your finances look like? What would your body look like? What would the job you're doing look like? If you knew you could wave a magic wand and you knew you wouldn't fail and you knew it would happen, I'm like, what would that look like? And normally that's the thing I tell people to go after. I'm like, if you can see it in your mind, you can hold it in your hand. The old philosophy, Eastern European philosophy of thousands of years, that once you can picture it and once you know what you're working towards, you can start going after that. But normally you have to get out of your own head to do it. We'll end up setting what I call, you know, realistic expectations. And realism is just the most traveled road to mediocrity. Like, you can set up realistic goals for yourself, or you can go after the fucking thing you want. You have two choices, and the choice is yours. And that's the only difference, that when I think back to a younger self, when I think back to my 23, 24 year old self, even my 25 year old self, I would always set realistic goals. I'm like, well, that's realistic. I'm like, I could probably do that. Whereas now I don't set realistic goals. I set goals outside of what I think is just outside the bounds of realism. And then that's what I go after, knowing that if I fall short, it's still going to be way further than if I'd gone after the realistic goal in the first place. And the Sahara cemented that idea. It made me realize that all these bounded limitations that I hold myself are self-created. I was like, I've made them. I'm like, the world hasn't made them. Nobody else. People might have given them to me from experiences and from different interactions that I've had with people along my life, but none of them are real. They're all just opinions that I've built and self-limiting stories that I created. And the Sahara gave me that. And when I crossed the finish line, the very last marathon, the sixth marathon on the sixth day, I remember thinking, fuck, I could do anything. I'm like, where else have I been limiting myself? And that was a massive moment change for me that has compounded massively and has compounded greatly over the last few years. The last one then, again, something that I haven't quite touched on in this podcast because it's taken probably 18 months to process, and that was running through the Arctic. And I mentioned earlier that I ran through the Arctic, so it was 230 kilometers through 5 days, but 86 of those kilometers were on a torn Achilles. So I tore my Achilles 86 kilometers from the end, and I've done a full podcast on that. I think it's episode 213. I'll link it in the show notes about running through the Arctic, and I talk about my kind of what happened there and how my Achilles tore and that entire experience. It was a wicked experience on reflection, literally running through what could be classified as running on the moon with local indigenous reindeer tribes. It was an amazing experience. But what I got from that was I had a completely different association with pain. Because I tore my Achilles and it was minus 30, minus 40 degrees in the Arctic, my eyelids froze over at one point because I wasn't moving enough, or wasn't moving at high enough speed that my core temperature could stay high, so my eyelids froze over. I was in so much pain that it made me completely change my relationship when it comes to my tolerance and pain and what we're actually able to go through. And pain's a funny one, because emotional pain, physical pain, they feel very similar. And I've always felt that I haven't been emotionally the strongest person in the past. I feel I've been physically strong. I've got quite good genetics. I grew up on a farm. I can move weight. I'm quite physically strong. But when it came to being emotionally strong, I always felt really, really weak. And one of the reasons that my mindset now is what I would consider quite strong is down to having been so weak in the past. The analogy I use is like the overweight person, and you know, for the first quarter of their life, for the first 25 years, and then they got into great shape and they're always wary that they could go back to being that overweight person. That person's always there kind of looking over their shoulder. That's how I feel a little bit about my mindset when it comes to keeping it strong and being emotionally weak. And what the Sahara, or what the Arctic gave me, was I feel like when I came back from that, it took me about a year to kind of think about this, because I was 3 months out after the Achilles tour. I was just doing upper body workouts. I wasn't really doing that much. I was just kind of reflecting on it, doing the other life tasks, being with my family, you know, prioritizing business stuff, you know, wrote the book, Rewire Your Mindset. Looking back on it now, I think about how it's changed my relationship with all kinds of pain, and that emotional pain and physical pain are very, very similar. And what the Arctic gave me was that you can become an oak tree in a storm. And a philosophy that I touched on, I think it was the episode on the 6 ways I completely rewired your mindset, was the philosophy of try and be the strongest person at your parents' funeral. I always think about that when it comes to who do you want to become and what kind of person you want to be. And you want to be the rock. You want to be the oak tree in the storm. You want the world to be fucking thrashing left and right and you're just standing still. You want to be the person that everyone around you is losing their heads and you're staying sane. You're staying and thinking clearly. You want to be the person that's the strongest at your parents' funeral or a loved one's funeral, if your parents are not alive anymore, or a loved one's funeral. And I think about that. And my association with pain has changed because of the Arctic. And I was always afraid. I used to be really afraid of things like my mom's death. I used to be really afraid about losing loved ones. I'm one of the very fortunate people that, outside of, say, grandparents, I haven't lost anybody super close to me, not in my adult life. And because of that, I was always afraid of it. I was always fearful that I would lose somebody close to me. Weirdly, I'm not that afraid of death myself. And I'm quite okay with my own mortality and making sure that I leave a stamp on the world. But I wasn't as good with worrying about loved ones leaving me or worrying about loved ones dying. And when I came back from the Arctic, it made me think about how that physical pain, and it fucking hurt. Like every step felt like somebody was just cattle prodding me through the spine. But it made me think that pain, emotional pain, if you've ever been through a breakup, if you've ever lost a job, if you've ever loved a loved one, I have in my earlier life, just not in my adult life, that emotional pain hurts very similar to physical pain. It's one of the reasons that people will take painkillers when they're going through a breakup, is that they'll feel the physical pain that you would normally get from a shattered knee, but it hurts your heart or it hurts your body. You know, it hurts in a very similar way. And it's down to pain receptors. And when I came back from the Arctic, it made me think that you can be the oak in a storm. You can be the person and try and be the person and work towards the person that if the world goes to fuck around you, you're standing still. And that was my philosophy through COVID. For those of you who listen to the podcast, who linked up or listened to some of those bonus episodes, for following my social media channels, that's what I try to do, you know, and not for any other reason than this is who I want to be. You know, it's the Elliot Hulse, who's been on this podcast. Elliot's been a mentor to me. When I was starting and coming up first, Elliot said to me about the bird singing in the tree. He was like, you just need to be the bird. I was like, what do you mean be the bird? He's like, well, a bird will sing in spring. He goes, you can walk out in the morning and a bird can be singing from the tree and you can say, oh, you've made my morning, bird. You're the best ever. I'm like, I'm having a great day. I'm in love. Work is going great. Finances are good, you know, and now I've heard your beautiful song. And the day and the morning is even better. And the bird goes, all right, cool. That's great. I'm a bird. I'm just going to keep singing. And then another person comes out of the house and they go, fuck you, bird. You know, I heard you singing this morning. I had a bad night's sleep as it was. I got fired from work. My girlfriend broke up with me or my boyfriend broke up with me. This is the worst day ever. And your singing's even more annoying. And the bird just turns and goes, cool, I'm a bird. I'm just going to keep singing. And I always think about that story when I think of social media. I always think about that story when I think of podcasts and when I think of the stuff that I create personally. I think we all have versions of this, that you just need to be the bird. You need to do your thing, regardless of what the outside world says, regardless of what the opinions of others are. You just do your thing, whatever that looks like for you. Prepping your meals and people make fun of you for it. Fuck them. Do it anyways. You know, going to the gym in the morning and people around you aren't into that lifestyle and they question you for it. Fuck them. Do it anyways. Be the bird. Be the person that can just go through it. Be the oak tree in the storm. Be the bird that just sings regardless of what people say about them. And be the strongest person at your parents' funeral, or be the strongest person at a loved one's funeral. I think that, as a reminder, even for me, that moment of working through it, getting through the Arctic, about 5 or 7 kilometers from the end, when I had pushed through the hardest part, weirdly, the pain was kind of going out of my Achilles at that time because I was so close to the end. And I remember thinking, fuck, you can handle anything. You can handle anything that is physically thrown at you in terms of a physical pain or even emotional pain. And that moment for me completely changed the attachment I had with the way I saw myself and the attachment I had with who I wanted to become. And I think we, again, similar to everything I've mentioned here, these are my stories, but we all have versions of these that happen to us. They normally come when you push yourself out of your comfort zone. They normally come when you condition yourself to feel the fear and do it anyways. They normally come when you have the courage to go after the things you know you want, regardless of the opinions of others. But you'll have them, you'll get them. You've probably already had some of these experiences yourself. Now it's just checking back in with them so that you can grow and become stronger as a result of them. So those moments where you're silencing that enemy between your two ears, like when you reflect, and when I'm going to reflect on today's episode, just identify and own that if your own biggest enemy lives between your two ears, you need to take responsibility for that. Own it, control it, change it. Once you own it, whatever's happened to you up until now, your experiences, your self-limiting stories, anything you've told yourself about what you can or can't do, that's just the enemy being between your two ears. And you can rewire your mindset around that. Identify those moments. There's going to be moments in your life when you meet people who will change your life. There's going to be moments in your life when you do something or have experiences that completely change the trajectory of your life. It might be meeting your soulmate. It might be meeting that person that puts you on the career path of something you love to do and inspires you and motivates you. It might be finding that coach or trainer or that program or course that changes the way you see things. That's all it is. And it's keeping an eye out for those moments and not forgetting that when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. One of my favorite quotes from Buddha, that there's going to be moments where your life can change on a dime, can change on a twopence. Just be mindful and be ready for those moments because they are coming. So that's everything from today's episode, a press record and talk solo mindset podcast. So these ones I generally have to go back and listen myself because I never know what direction I'm going to go. Hopefully you enjoy it. I know some of you like this format or really enjoy this format. So check out some of the other podcasts where I've done something similar. I'll link them in the show notes or in the description for today's podcast, wherever you're listening to podcasts. That is today's episode on moments, how to look out for the moments that can change your life. Hope you enjoyed. Catch you all next week.